Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Coco Express, part of the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your host on the Coco Express is Aurelia Lyles. She's all about keeping it real. Great guests, interesting topics, so get on board. Listen, learn, live.
Hey, welcome to the Coco Express Show for Wednesday, March 12, 2014. We are so happy to be here with you again this evening. And, you know, this month is Women's History Month. And on our show, on the Coco Express Show, we celebrate women all day, every day, every opportunity we can, because there's so many women out there who've made strides, who've made sacrifice, who've just made a difference in someone's life, and it's just an amazing prospect. And today on our show, we have another amazing woman. This woman, Shanti Das, she stepped out, she stepped in, she stepped up, and she turned around to teach you how to stand on her shoulders. There are not many women who are out there who are willing to do that and able to do that, and she's doing just that. She's written a book called The Hip Hop Professional, and the book is in its second printing, and she's changed it to The Hip Hop Professional 2.0. It's a woman's guide to climbing the ladder for success in the entertainment business. Her resume is so impressive, and it is a testament to what hard work, dedication, commitment, integrity, and just belief in yourself will get you. I am going to allow her to tell her story, because no one can tell your story better than you. So please allow me the opportunity to bring to you Ms. Shanti Shoestring Das. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I am doing well. How are you?
Great to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm honored to have you. You are an amazing, amazing woman. And I have to tell you.
Oh, thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, I read your book, and I was just so thoroughly, I guess you could say, thrown back. There were some things that as we go through the interview, I'll share with you that we have in common. And it'll be things that you don't think that we do, but I was just really grateful for this type of book. Not often do you have an opportunity to share your experience and to give advice, and that's the thing that was just so prominent in the book, the fact that you gave advice on how to be successful in any industry as a businesswoman. And that's so important, especially today, for our younger sisters.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Now, I want you to start off by telling us who you are for those who don't know you.
Okay. Well, my name is Shanti Das. I'm a native from Atlanta, Georgia. I've worked in the entertainment business, well over 22 years. I am telling my age, but I am happy and grateful and humble to still be alive and be able to share my knowledge and experience that I've had all these years. And as you mentioned, you know, I stepped out. I took a leap of faith and, you know, went after my dreams. And it was my dream, you know, many years ago when I was in college to become an executive in the entertainment industry. And I was blessed and able to fulfill that. I worked at a number of different record companies. I got my start at LaFace Records back in 1993, working with artists such as Outkast, Goody Mob, Usher early on in his career, TLC, Toni Braxton. It was just amazing. And so I did that for about 8.5 years and moved to New York City, the place where some of us dream of going and working one day, which that was a dream of mine when I was in the seventh grade to live in New York City. And I worked at Arista Records for a couple years, then moved over to Columbia Records, was vice president of marketing, and then most recently, my last position was executive vice president of urban marketing at Universal Motown Records under Sylvia Roan. And so I decided, you know, after that great, illustrious, and long career to quit. You know, I just have been going through some personal issues and some family health issues, and I decided to kind of, not necessarily throw in the towel, but, like, really figure out what my passion points were and what I needed to do in that next phase of life to help make me happy. And so I moved back to Atlanta in 2009, started doing a lot of philanthropic work, still did some entertainment marketing on the side, also started a showcase here called ATL Live on the Park that's still going strong. But more importantly, I started mentoring and speaking at a lot of colleges, and it's funny how God reveals things to you, because I was like, wow, like, I love this. I love sharing my story. I love trying to help other women. And so I first wrote The Hip-Hop Professional back in 2010, but I didn't do a lot to promote it because I was still really going through my transition and trying to kind of just figure out which direction to go into and how to make things work as an entrepreneur. So I just recently relaunched the book late last year, and I added 7 new chapters. This is a 2.0 version, and so I'm thrilled with the outcome. I've been getting some really great press and started speaking at colleges again, and now it really is my purpose and my passion to try to help share my story and help young adults in general. You know, the book is geared towards women, but there are a lot of men that have read the book and that have, I think, learned a lot from it. And it's been endorsed by Ludacris and several other people on the back, some of my mentors and friends in the entertainment business. So it's just a blessing. And so here I am, and thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm grateful. That's the end of the show. Okay, now. Now, the book, okay, we can start with the book. That's where we're going to start, but that's not where we're going to finish. We can start with the book. The book is broken down into 25 chapters, and what's interesting about it is you kind of, like, taste certain phrases from certain songs, and you use them as, like, the header for each chapter of your book. Which is really interesting, because when you're trying to capture the attention of certain audiences, they're going to gravitate to it because they're going to relate to that. Is that one of the reasons why you decided to do it that way?
Absolutely. Well, one, you know, I've been a hip-hop head all of my life, and I love so much of the music. And granted, some of the lyrics, you know, bother me at times. I'm not one that is for censorship. Mm-hmm. I do believe in freedom of speech, but I do at the same time, you know, try to promote balance, you know, within artists and their lyrics and what they do as well, in terms of trying to, you know, make a name for themselves and for giving back to the community. I, especially nowadays, I typically buy all the clean versions of all the music, which works better for me.
Okay.
But yeah, I decided to use, you know, several songs that were important to me growing up and kind of put a different spin and twist on them.
Okay. Now, in some of the, what I did was I kind of, like, pulled out certain things that popped out to me that would be significant to talk about. And the first one that popped out was reputation and integrity.
Yes.
Okay, let's go into that.
So important. So as a woman working in the entertainment business, you know, your reputation and your word, you know, means so much. And it speaks volumes for who and what you represent. And so I always try to make sure that I demanded that, you know, respect and carry myself, you know, the way I wanted to be treated. And, you know, I talk about that in the book, about ladies having that self-respect and having that self-confidence, because, you know, I see a lot of my sisters who, you know, are in the industry, and some of them, obviously not all of them, it's some women out there that are doing dynamic things that I even, you know, look up to and are proud of them and wish them nothing but the best. But some of the young girls that are getting in the business, you know, I've seen them wearing, you know, the really short skirts to the office or the really low-cut blouses, and, you know, it can be a distraction. And so I'm not saying you cannot be, you can't embrace, I'm not saying you can't embrace your sexuality, you know, and dress like you want to dress, but there's a fine line there. Mm-hmm. And so you always want to understand that it's still a business first. You know, people look at the entertainment business because it is so social, and they think it's one big party, and that's absolutely not the case. And so I think even with music and the direction it's going in now, you see so many, you know, partnerships now with corporate companies. You also mm-hmm. see a lot of artists that get opportunities, you know, with major television shows and networks. And so when you're going into those meetings, you know, you still want to be respectful, whether you're an executive or an artist. And so, you know, that was a big part of my book, just trying to teach young ladies to really respect themselves first and foremost.
Okay. The other, the second thing that popped out to me was a difficult job.
Mm-hmm.
I know for my own experience, doing a difficult job can be overwhelming and frustrating.
Absolutely.
How were you able, what were the things that you would do and the different, I guess, kind of, I know for me it's just different little tricks that I tell myself to get through a difficult job. How were you able to do it?
Well, for me, some of my tricks were, you know, trying to be everybody's little sister, if you will, and you know, getting in good with the guys so that I could kind of divert some of the attention from, you know, the advances.
Mm-hmm.
Also, let's see, what were some of my other tricks? It's really not even a trick. It's just letting my work speak for itself. Like, for example, I talk about in the book where I had to, you know, the difficult job of, you know, going into the strip clubs a lot. And so I'm not going to be a hypocrite and say I never went into strip clubs when I was younger, but for the most part, I was just going into them to get the job done, to get the music played from the groups that I was working with. And so I just did what I had to do, and I kind of went and hung out in the corner. Like, those were never really, you know, my favorite hangouts because it's just mm-hmm. not really my thing. And, you know, sometimes some of my artists and friends would want me to just come and hang out even if, when it wasn't work to do. Now, I went with them a couple of times, but, you know, I just tried to play the backfield, if mm-hmm. you will, and
okay,
just kind of stand in the background. And, you know, like, it's like sometimes you have to, you know, do things and go places with artists because, you know, in addition to building a good working relationship and rapport, you know, you got to break some of the ice and get to know them a little bit and let them know you're comfortable being around them. So, yeah, there were times where I had to do that, but I always tried to make sure, you know, I fell back and played my position and just wasn't all in the forefront of everything. Just kind of let them have their fun, and I just fell back, if you will. So that always kind of really worked well for me when I had to be in environments that were sometimes uncomfortable.
Okay, because it was a joke that I said with somebody I shared with someone earlier today. I said, the strip clubs are kind of like the golf course.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, people, you know, unfortunately, or believe it or not, people get work done in mm-hmm. the strip clubs. And a lot of the artists, for some reason, you know, they love to do that. So, you know, it's one of those things. And, you know, I did what I had to do and moved on from it. But, again, all while carrying myself, you know, like a lady.
Okay. The next one is don't be afraid to share a contact.
Yes. Wow. Why do we get so territorial? Excuse me, sometimes where we don't want to share contacts. You know, I think, I don't know what it is, if it's the intimidation factor, you know, or women feel like, you know, if they share a contact that you're going to, like, take their opportunity away from them. And I think that, you know, for one, if you've done your job and properly made that connection and established that relationship and contact, that it doesn't matter if you introduce somebody else because you guys are going to do separate business, in, you know, anyway. And so for me, it's all about us working together, you know, and trying to learn how to be a little bit more open and helpful to one another. I think that's very important in this day and age.
That's really important, because, and I do know how important that is, and I do understand that as well. It's like the opportunity was given to you from someone, so what is keeping you from sharing that opportunity with someone else?
Absolutely, absolutely. And now, don't get me wrong, I've seen times where women have, you know, taken opportunities, you know, away from somebody, you know, or really, you know, kind of did some, you know, behind the back, backstabbing type of stuff. But, you know, again, it goes back into who you are and how you establish your relationships and more importantly, your working relationships.
Now, the next one is the acronym, CREAM. What does that stand mm-hmm. for?
Cash rules everything around me. And that was from the song from the Wu-Tang Clan back in the day.
Now, how did that relate to you or not?
So for me, you know, it was really interesting because once I started making a lot of money, I felt like, wow, okay, I can easily get caught up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to be that person that just lived for the money. And I see so many people, you know, who are really successful and they make a ton of money, and it's only about the money. And, you know, I really realized that once, you know, I was, I think, more established in the industry and had experienced a lot of things, and I grew to understand that, you know, it really wasn't about the money. It was about helping people and trying to give back. But there was a time where I was caught up in the hype, and I was buying a lot of the, you know, expensive handbags and purses and, you know, traveling all the time and vacationing here and there and, you know, living the good life, which I'll talk about that. And I still think it's important to enjoy yourself, but it's also important to have a balance in life. And you cannot let money rule you. You know, I don't care what industry you're in. I just don't think that's a good way to live your life. I think you need to humble yourself and understand that, you know, a lot of times, you know, obviously money solves a lot of problems, but oftentimes money can be the root to a lot of your problems. And so I just grew to understand that, you know, it wasn't about money, and I just wasn't going to let money rule my life.
As you said, more money, more problems, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, you mentioned the three P's. What are those three P's, and how do you perceive them?
So, you know, it's funny, you know, we often joke about the power of the P. And, you know, we obviously know what that P is in terms of the woman's anatomy. But I'm not talking about that one, but I think that that would actually catch, you know, be catchy and hopefully, you know, spark someone's attention to want to read it. So I talk about the three P's, which are perseverance, professionalism, and positioning. And so for me, you know, this industry is a very tough industry, and so I just always try to be very honest with women to let them know that, you know, although you may want it right now and right away, that you may not land that job that you're looking for, you know, right out of college. And so if this is your goal and your dream, you know, you really have to stick to it and be willing to put in the time, you know, and persevere and understand that, you know, for those that work really hard, you know, most oftentimes, you know, it pays off. And so you have to really, you know, position yourself to network, to, you know, volunteer your time, to shadow people, find ways to make connections with the people that you want to work for. You know, if that job opportunity is not available, you know, like I said, right when you want it to be, you got to hang in there and hang tough and be willing to persevere. It's just so important, so important.
Okay.
And the second P is professionalism, you know, and this goes for any industry. You know, you got to be professional with people. You know, return phone calls, return emails. If somebody asks you something, you know, get back to them in a timely manner. I just see, you know, I think because we live in this social media age, it's so easy to get back to somebody. You know, there's no reason why. It's like 2014, and I still talk to my colleagues, and they're complaining about people who aren't professional, you know, or how you carry yourself. Even, you know, dressing, being professional in your attire. You know, I talk about dressing the part in the networking book that I have called The 1-2-3s of Networking. You know, it's all about how you dress, you know, and carry yourself. So it's just really, really important, you know, to be professional in any industry, and particularly in the entertainment business. And the last P is positioning. You know, there are so many different events that we always go to, and sometimes we just go and hang in the corner, or you just, you know how we do it, we hang with the people that we know. And we may not network or make any contacts, you know, during that event, and it's just so ridiculous that we go to these events and just hang with the people that we know. You know, position yourself in the room so that you can start meeting other people, and you share your business cards and strike up conversations with people that you don't know, because what's the point of going if you're just going to hang out at these events with people that you know? Now, if you're going to a social event with your friends, that's different. But when you're in a business environment, in a business setting, you know, you have to position yourself around the room so that you can properly network and make the most of that visit or that trip.
Okay. That's really, that, you know, all of that is really good advice, because we do kind of become either cliquish or we withdraw when we're placed in unfamiliar territory and situations.
Of course. Absolutely, and we get afraid, and sometimes we clam up, or we don't know how to approach people, or, you know, we lose that confidence to walk up to somebody and say hello, you know, all of that. And so I'm just trying to share and let people know, like, it, you know, really it's not that difficult, and you absolutely should not be afraid to get out there and meet people.
And the next one, which really ties in the ties in with the first one, is be a worker bee, not a groupie.
Right.
I like that one a lot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You just want to be known for being the person that gets the job done. You know, you definitely don't want to be known as a groupie, because that will not get you too far. Absolutely.
I believe that. That ties in with reputation and integrity, because if you're busy being a groupie, then that means that you're open and susceptible to whatever advances come your direction. And you also talk about the advances, and, you know, and how you were able to keep yourself from being affected by them, which was really interesting as well, because you were in a male-dominated industry, and being a woman and being a very attractive woman, I'm sure you had a lot of challenges.
Oh, gosh, yeah. It was tough being a woman, you know, and, you know, I think a lot of us often have to fight off those advances and deal with, you know, the unpleasantries in the workplace. But, again, that goes back to what I was saying earlier. It's about how you carry yourself. And, you know, and for me, there were times that I still felt like I was carrying myself in a respectable manner, and I still had to deal with that. And so what I often do when I talk to women and tell them, it's important to just deal with it up front, you know, and nip it in the bud so that you don't have that problem moving forward, and so that they know where you stand. You know, hopefully, you know, the person, whoever, you know, that put you in that uncomfortable position will be man or woman enough to understand, you know, where you're coming from and to move past it and to not, you know, do it again. But, you know, I also tell people that, you know, if the problem persists, then you have to be smart about it and go to HR. You know, I like to try to handle things on my own first without getting anybody else involved. But certainly if you feel like you're in a compromised position and nothing is changing, then you should absolutely, you know, make sure that you deal with what you need to deal with from a company standpoint.
Okay. That is really true, and it makes a lot of sense, because you even mentioned in the book about you having to get legal representation so that you could be given the proper respect that you deserve when negotiating.
Well, as it related to my compensation. Because 9 times out of 10, once you start climbing the executive ladder at most of these companies, at least on the entertainment side, you know, you typically don't negotiate your own deal. And so I had to make sure I had the right lawyer on my team that I felt like would go in and fight for what I deserved. And you also have to make sure that you take the time to interview lawyers and talk to the lawyer that you feel like is going to best represent you. It's really important. I wouldn't suggest just getting anybody that says they're an entertainment attorney. You want to get people that, one, have the experience, you know, that have done executive deals in the entertainment industry before, because it's only a few companies that are out there anyway. And so you want to make sure that they already have the relationship or some sort of rapport with the executives within the company that you work with. So it's important to, like, take your time, and to really make sure you find the right attorney to best represent you.
Okay. And the one that I really like, really, really like, don't blame your team if you don't set up the play.
Yeah, that's so important. You know, because if it's your company from an entrepreneurial standpoint, you know, you have to, like, really talk to your team and tell them, you know, what the approach is, you know, what you are expecting, you know, out of the company and what your plans are, what your strategy is. And so, you know, if you don't set the tone initially, then you can't be mad at your staff for not carrying things out the way they're supposed to be, especially if you own your own business. That is so important. And so I always make sure I set my expectations out the gate. If there's an event that I'm working on, if there's a project that I'm working on, you know, I establish the groundwork initially. I talk to my team, you know, I lay out the strategy so it's understood, and then I allow them to enhance upon that strategy. But it's absolutely, you know, up to me as the head of the company, you know, to set the strategy up initially.
Okay.
Now, if you set the strategy and they don't do their job, that's different.
Of course.
But if you send them out there into, you know, the woods and forest with no tools and, you know, you hadn't really talked to them or, you know, you guys hadn't talked about expectations, then that's absolutely your fault.
Okay. Yeah. You're absolutely right. And it's like go out without any water and try to go all day and don't drink anything, and what's going to happen?
Right.
Yeah. So you kind of like in the book with your Shantiisms. Give us a few of them.
So, yes, my Shantiisms, which is funny. Those are just kind of some tidbits that I kind of live by. And, you know, one thing that really bothers me is when people aren't trying to learn. So one of them is ignorance doesn't lie in not knowing, yet in not attempting to learn. You know, we don't know everything, right? You know, I feel like I'm constantly learning. I read articles on the internet. I read books so that I can learn more. And so I respect someone more when they try, when they're out there seeking knowledge and information, as opposed to the person that kind of sits around and complains 24/7. And never does anything to either better themselves or learn, you know, more. So that's one that's important to me. Another one that's important to me, let's see. Your time is money, period. So very, very true. You know, oftentimes, you know, I will find myself, and this is the thing, right? When you're mentoring and trying to help people, you still have to be aware of your time. You know, you can't sit there and talk to somebody for 2 hours if you really can't spare that time. And as an entrepreneur, you know, if you're not out there working and hustling and landing those new contracts and clients, you're not making any money. And so it took me a long time to really understand that, pardon me. And it's almost like, think about it like a lawyer, right? So when you go into a lawyer's office, that clock starts ticking as soon as you sit down. And those billable hours, you know, are being monitored at that very point. And it's almost like you got to look at yourself like that. Like, you know, when I sit down and talk to this person, you know, so if you're mentoring, you know, carve out 30 minutes and try to stick to that. Because people will take advantage of your time, especially when you're really nice. And so you have to be aware of that. Then also on the flip side of that, if you're taking a meeting and you're trying to land some new business and you feel like it's not going anywhere, then, you know, wrap that meeting up and move on to the next situation. I just think we don't value our time enough, and we have to equate our time with money, particularly from a business perspective, so that we kind of know how to go through life and schedule things out and adjust, you know, our lives properly.
Okay, that's great. Now, that's the book, and the book can be found on Amazon, correct?
Yeah, the e-book is available on iTunes or on Amazon for the Kindle, but the hard copy of the book can be found at www.thehiphopprofessional.com.
Okay, great, great. Now we're going to move from the book into some other aspects of your life. Now, I said we have some similarities, and you're going to find them really, really strange, but really funny. I went to the same high school as Clive Davis.
Did you really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I didn't go when he was in there. But I went to the same as Clive Davis, and it's really interesting. They had a club, and it was like the really smartsy people, and it was called the Arista Club. That's where he got the name. The Arista
Club. Get out of here.
Yes.
And what was the name of that high school?
Erasmus Hall.
Wow. How cool is that?
Yeah. And I said, and this one is going to knock you out, too. I know Reverend Warnock.
Oh, he's my favorite. I've been a member of Ebenezer, I guess, in 2010, maybe. Mm-hmm. And it has been life-changing for me. I love that church. I think they're amazing, and I think he is simply amazing.
Well, I knew him when he was an associate minister at Abyssinian Baptist Church in New York City.
Wow, are you serious?
Yes, and he baptized my daughter.
That is so cool. Wow, very small world. Very cool.
Yes,
very cool.
And I said, it's really funny. We have these similarities, and it's really, you know, I'm like, she's not gonna realize all of these things.
And no, that's great.
So, and I am, and I'm a native New Yorker, as you probably guessed by now.
Yes. Absolutely. Have you lived anywhere else or just New York all of your life?
Well, now I'm in Delaware.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm in Delaware, but I've kind of like hit around a couple of cities and did a little bit of traveling, not a lot. I guess you could say I love New York as much as I love New York, and I didn't want to go to many places, but my mom was one firm believer in expanding yourself and your horizons.
Mm-hmm.
Please go outside your place of residence and learn something. So,
well, I think she was dead on with that. I applaud her for giving you that great advice.
Yes. Yes,
very, very, very important.
Now, when I initially did the introduction, I said you stepped out, you stepped in, and you stepped up. And you turned around, and when you turned around, you extended your hand to help others. And let's talk about May We Rest in Peace.
Oh, yeah, which I did back in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first big charity initiative I did, and I started on it before. It was funny. It was probably my last 2 weeks of being at Universal Motown, and I was at the office, and one evening after work, I was surfing the web, and I was on CNNMoney.com, and I saw an article about how broke the city of Detroit was, and, you know, read further and found out that the city morgue had lost all of its city, I believe, and state funding that year.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were bodies, you know, people's family members that were there. You know, they were deceased, and they were in these body bags. And the body bags literally were, like, stacked up like, you know, shoes or bags in somebody's closet. And so for me, that was devastating. And so I thought, wow, like, how sad is this, you know, that these people's family members, you know, are there and they can't have, you know, any proper burial for them. So long story short, you know, I sent out a long letter to my colleagues in the business, and I never formed an official 501c3, but I started raising money for the Wayne County Morgue, and I called them and established a relationship and started working directly with them. So, like, in the first few weeks, I think I raised like $6,000 or $7,000, and I had enough money to bury anywhere between 6 and 8 people. And then, you know, I just started sending out letters to other artists. I even reached out to Kid Rock, who I didn't know, but I reached out to his record company, and they put me in touch with him. He made a nice big donation, and Akon and Busta Rhymes and other people made donations. So by the time, I guess, the next 3 or 4 months rolled around, I had raised close to $30,000, and we were able to bury 30 people in Detroit. And so it was just, you know, really gratifying for me to see some dignity restored to some of those families so that they could finally, you know, have closure with their loved ones.
And that's not where it ends for you in regards to your philanthropical endeavors. You do a great deal of work with a lot of organizations in Atlanta where you are.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I do a homeless feeding once a year called No Reservations Needed. We were feeding them monthly, but we were working kind of on the street. For those of you that aren't from Atlanta, there is a street called Pine Street in Cortland, two streets, and we used to feed some of the homeless families in our community by just going and setting up our own tables and going to, Popeyes and setting up food, sometimes once or twice a month on Sundays. And so then it started growing, and we started partnering with an organization called the Atlanta Mission. So now we do a big Thanksgiving feeding, and we feed over 500 people, which is great. I also do work with the Genesis Shelter here in Atlanta, which they take care of homeless mothers that have newborn babies. And so that's been amazing for me. I do that twice a year. I also do a shoebox campaign with the United Way, which they do on a national level. And so, we collect toiletries to give to homeless people in the community. I also do a back-to-school backpack drive. I've done toy drives to benefit Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. I mean, just so many, smaller efforts. And my thing is I like to do a lot of the smaller efforts that mm-hmm. directly impact people or specific communities. One day I'm sure I will form my own foundation in 501c3, but I like being able to give to various organizations as opposed to just one.
Okay. And now you also turned around to teach. Now, I'm not sure if I'm correct, but I read somewhere where your book is now in Harvard as one of the teaching tools.
Well, I wish it was one of the teaching tools. It is actually at Harvard in their Hip Hop Archives program.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Amazing and fantastic, and I'm very excited. They have this wonderful program there under the Hip Hop Archives, and so for my book to be there is really great. And so any students, that are going in and studying hip hop, hopefully they'll take a look at my book while there.
That speaks volumes in general, because you would not have ever equated Harvard with hip hop.
No, not at all. Not at all. But they have an amazing program there. So, kudos to the people that run the program there. It's fantastic.
Excellent. And although you're in the middle of your, really you're at the beginning of stages of the rest of your life, looking mm-hmm. back, what would you say to the you then now?
Oh, gosh. What would I say? Like when I was just starting out?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's several things that I would say if I could talk to Ashanti that was just starting out. Number one, I would say save your money. I blew through a lot of money over the years, and so I say that to all young people is to make sure you save for a rainy day. I would also say to myself, don't be afraid as a woman to ask for what you want. And when I say that, I mean, even if we're talking about our titles, our salaries, just different opportunities. I feel like sometimes women are afraid to ask for what they want, or they beat around the bush, or they just, they're happy to be in certain situations. And so, women, if you're not going to ask for it, then you may not get it. But our male counterparts, they're the first ones who are very vocal about, their desires, their wants, and their needs. And so I just really would encourage other women to be that way, especially myself when I was younger, because I feel like there were some times where there were things that I wanted or felt like I deserved, and I just didn't know how to ask for it. But as, as time went on, I think I got better at that, but it would have been good, when I was younger, to kind of have approach things differently from a business perspective.
Okay. Now, there's a story that you talk about in the book, and it's something that I always kind of keep in the back of my head. You never know who you're going to meet and who that person's going to become to you. So, and that would be the story with you and L.A. Reid.
Oh, yeah. When we were in the airport.
Yes.
That was hilarious. I was going to visit a good friend. I was still in college at the time, but I had already, I had already interned at LaFace. No, I'm sorry. I was working at Capitol Records at the time during that summer. And so, ironically, Capitol was located in the same building as LaFace Records. And I was in D.C. visiting a girlfriend, and I'm short, as some of your listeners don't know or hadn't seen pictures of me. I'm not that tall. So I was at baggage claim waiting for my luggage, and there was a gentleman standing there, and I was just like, okay, I can't speak in my bag because it was a really crowded flight. And so I tapped him on his shoulder and asked him to get my luggage. And so he turned around and kind of gave me this weird look and stare, and then I asked him again. I was like, sir, can you please get my luggage? So he proceeded to get me my bag, and then not even maybe 5 minutes later, I'm at the payphone. I'll tell you how long ago it was. I was at the payphone calling my friend because we didn't have cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling her I was ready. I had my luggage. Come pick me up. Well, here comes this man in like 5 sky caps with all this Louis Vuitton luggage, and I'm sitting here going, who the heck did I just ask to get me my bag? Like, I was so embarrassed. So he walked a little ways down the airport, and then it clicked to me. I was like, oh, my gosh, that was L.A. Reid. I'm so embarrassed. And so, of course, he went on out the door, and he smiled. So this might have been, I don't know, a couple of weeks later. Here I am, you know, showing up for my job at Capitol Records, and I'm at the elevator bank. Who do I run into? It was Mr. Reid, and I was just like, oh, God. And so we joked about it, and it was really funny. And so then when I ended up actually applying for a job at LaFace, I think it was a year or two later, he remembered it, and, you know, we laughed about it again. But, yeah, that was pretty funny.
Well, it's good you were behaving yourself.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, all I did was ask for, I was hoping chivalry wasn't dead, that gentlemen mm-hmm. would still get a young lady's luggage and offer a helping hand. So it was an innocent and harmless story. So
no, but it was a cute one, and that's what I say. You never know who you're meeting and who they're going to become
you
in your life.
You really don't. You really – and this is the other thing, too. Like, I didn't come at him disrespectful. You know, I was very firm, but I wasn't rude. And so for that reason, you know, he helped me. And so I would say, again, like you said, you never know when you're going to come in contact with people. You know, it's always, even if you ask somebody for help, it's still a way to ask. And it's all in your approach. And so that's important, ladies. Make sure you are always as professional as you can be in your approach.
Now, you too. Your origins are in radio, and you're back at the mic again. What are you doing, and it's different from what you've done before?
Well, I started in college radio, but I never had any traditional radio gigs on terrestrial radio. About 2 years ago, I started working with Chris Webber, who is a former NBA player that I'm sure, you know, a lot of your listeners look at on TNT. And he had a sports and entertainment radio show, and I did that for about 6 months on Sirius XM, and it was an amazing experience. It was really great. But he didn't end up renewing his contract, for, I think, personal reasons. He had just gotten really busy with TNT. But it was amazing. And then I also did a brief stint with Joe Claire for an online radio show. But, you know, Joe and I are going to do some other stuff together in the future. He just landed a gig, though, about 4 or 5 months ago with Frank Ski. And so he's on the radio in D.C., and he left Atlanta. So we just, hadn't had the opportunity to to do anything else together. But I really love radio, and I'm looking forward to getting back into it in some form or fashion. So.
Oh, great. Now, what women have come into your life and made a difference in your life as far as your career or personal life is concerned?
Well, my personal life, I would have to say my sister, who really motivated me. She's older, and my mom had to raise three young kids, and, you know, as a single parent, because my dad died when I was a baby, and so that wasn't easy, and my sister really stepped up even at a very young age, and I saw her kind of pull herself up and really, you know, pay her way through college and get this great job, and I was like, well, if she can do it, I certainly can do it, you know, and I didn't have that woe is me mentality. There were things we did have growing up, but there was a lot we didn't have. But we didn't let that pigeonhole us into going after our dreams and our careers. So my sister absolutely has been a huge inspiration for me. Dr. Cherry Carter, she is a psychologist here in the Atlanta area. She's also a professional coach and mentor. And she is the one who inspired me to write the book. So she's been a really big influence. And, you know, I have to thank Sylvia Rohn for giving me the opportunity at Universal Motown. She definitely supported me in various instances within the company, so I thank her for that. And she's now still in the business and was just recently named president of Epic Records, so I'm really proud of her. Another young lady, Dee Dee Murray, who worked at Capitol Records and gave me my shot there, and also works with various artists throughout her career. She's amazing, and, you know, it's a lot of women that just opened doors for me, and I'm very appreciative.
And the reason why I bring that to the forefront is because, first of all, we never get to where we are solely by ourselves, and if I always say if someone tells you I made it on my own, they're delusional.
Oh, they're lying.
Yes.
And I don't like calling people liars, but 9 times out of 10, that's not true. We all had somebody, whether they were a family member or, you know, a colleague, one of your, you know, I don't know, just friends
a
you
best
grew up
friend,
with.
Right.
Or students, you know, that you went to school with. You know, it's everybody had to help somebody at some point. So, yeah, don't believe that. That is a true misconception that people will say they got there on their own.
Yes. You may have done the grunt of the work, but there was always somebody who had your back, whether they were there visibly or invisibly, you know, whether you could see them or they're behind the scenes pulling strings for you that you didn't even know that they were pulling for you. And, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I thought that your book was just so amazing, because it just kind of lays out life. You know, the realities of life when you're working in, well, when you're working in general, you know, and it just says that you should do all of these things. You're not required to do them, but you should do them because they will help you.
Absolutely. And I just, you know, I don't think it's my way or the highway. You know, I definitely don't think that, but I do think that I have experienced enough so that I have some really good, you know, practical information that I can share that hopefully some young woman or young man will be inspired and use that, you know, along with, you know, some of the other things that they've learned. You know, again, I really feel like my information can be added into what you have when you use your best judgment for your own life, but certainly you can look at some of my experiences and hopefully learn something from them.
Now I'm going to ask you a personal question. Well, two.
Okay.
What
okay.
was it like being around all those good-looking men?
Well, you know what? I'll say this much. Yes, there were a lot of really good-looking men in the entertainment business. And, you know, I would be lying if I said I never, you know, dated anybody that worked in the industry. You know, I did, but I did it on my own terms. But, you know, I always made it a point not to date my artists. You know, I didn't play that game, you know, no bosses, no artists, like that's a no-no for me. That didn't work for me. I don't advise it. And if you do it, be careful. That's all I can say to you. But, yeah, you know, it was tough. But, you know, I was always so caught up more than anything in my job and kind of like, you know, what was my next promotion and my next opportunity. And so, you know, it didn't bother me as much. You know, I didn't get caught up in all the craziness. But, you know, I was human.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it was okay to look. It was definitely okay to look.
And the other question I wanted to ask you was about the TLC movie. Being that you were part of that whole era, that whole scenario, how did you feel when you watched the movie that the reenactment of their lives?
You know, I thought that there were some really good parts about the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought there were other parts of it that, you know, because some of it was before I came on board. So
mm-hmm.
I really can't speak to it from a factual standpoint because of the early beginnings of TLC. You know, I wasn't there, but I came on board, like, towards the end of the first album. But
okay.
I'm just so proud of the girls. And I think more than anything, it's important that they were able to share their story, you know, years after the fact. And I think, for the most part, they did a good job. But with anything or any, you know, piece of intellectual property, particularly on the film side, I think they embellish a little on stuff that maybe was true or wasn't true. You know, it's a movie, so not
mm-hmm.
everything is going to be 100% accurate, but I think they did a really good job, and I'm just proud of the girls. I think they casted a wonderful group of young women and men, you know, to portray them.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that it has afforded the girls present day some new opportunities, allowing them to tour again and to do other things. And for that, I'm happy for them because, you know, they're out there working and keeping the brand alive for TLC, which is great.
Because I know T-Boz is going to be in a stage play, Do You Trust Your Best Friend? And it's going to be in Philadelphia in April.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
He's still a good friend of mine, and we keep in touch. I know she has so much going on right now. I'm so happy for her.
Yes. Now, what next for you? What's next for Shanti Daz?
What's next for me is to really get out there and continue to, you know, work towards my goal of speaking at colleges, getting my college tour off the ground, which I plan to launch and get out there and share my story in September.
Mm-hmm.
You
okay.
know, I really see myself more as a person that is able to talk to the students from a one-on-one perspective or have a conversation. Like, I don't really like standing up, you know, giving two-hour lectures. You know, I want to get in there and really talk to the students and have them talk to me and be able to interact with me. So that's what's important to me. So I'm a conversationalist. You know, I love to talk. And I love to talk to people, and I love for that conversation to be a two-way street. And so that's why, you know, I set up one of my initiatives called a college chat room, and it's where I go in and talk to students, you know, on a more personal basis as opposed to, again, me just kind of standing there and lecturing to them. So I'm really excited about that. I'm also going to be selling merchandise for my brand, The Hip Hop Professional. I'm continuing with the showcase that I do, ATL Live on the Park. It's in its fifth season, and I'm so excited about that. We have not lost any steam, which is exciting. And I want to do more work in the community. So that's a big deal for me, too.
Okay. Now, where can people find you on the web? And what social media sites can they connect
with? So I'm on Twitter a lot and Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And my name on those sites is Shanti Das, Shanti. DAS 404, and that's both Twitter and Instagram. You can also find me on YouTube under The Hip Hop Professional. I'm going to be also doing some mini web interviews where I sit down and have a conversation with different people in the entertainment industry. And you can find me on Facebook / The Hip Hop Professional. And then my website is S-H-A-N-T-I-D-A-S. I'm sorry. That's not my website. My website is www.thehiphopprofessional.com. I'm sorry. I got so many. It's like we got so many. You got your website. You got this piece of social media. That one. So, yeah.
And you didn't mention Press Reset.
Press Reset ENT is my company, but I'm not, it's not as big of a priority for me right now. I still do events. Like, I do celebrity procurement for, like, movie screenings. I do talent bookings for private events for corporations. And I still do some independent music marketing on the side, but my priority right now is the hip-hop professional. And so although Press Reset is there, that's not the focus of my attention, but it is still a part of what I do from an entertainment perspective. But I'm just really, really, really trying to launch this book and my platform for speaking right now.
Okay, great. Excellent. Well, we have been together for a while, and I feel like your family, okay?
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank
You're welcome.
You. And I did. I wish I'd have known what your you know, Twitter handle was, because I didn't get a chance. I tweeted that I was going to be on the show, but I didn't have any information for the show.
Okay. That's fine. I can, you know, it's the Coco Express. That's basically all we are, the Coco Express show. What I can do is I'll send you some stuff. I have your the different ways to get in contact with you based on the conversation we just had. And I have your number as well. So,
great.
If it's okay to use that number.
Please, absolutely. And if you ever do any events in New York and I can get up that way, I'd certainly love to support you as well.
Oh, great. That would be excellent, because every now and again we hit a restaurant or two and we kind of like commandeer it.
Well, I'll let you know when I'm coming into town. So.
Oh, great. That would be excellent.
Stay in touch.
Great. Yes, yes, indeed. Since we have some similarities, some commonalities, you know.
Yes, absolutely. I love it.
Yes. And, well, I mean, I really enjoyed this. This was really a great interview for me because of the simple fact that I love the book. I love what the book does. I love what the book is about. I like the book's mission. And it's really important. And, you know, as I'm reading the book, and something else that I wanted to bring out was the fact that it doesn't matter what age you are, whatever it is you decide to do, these things apply. So
absolutely, right? You know, it's about hard work. It's about determination. It's about self-accountability. It's about self-respect. It's about self-confidence. I mean, yes, you're absolutely right. No matter if you're an entrepreneur or if you work in a traditional corporate setting, you know, all of these things that I talk about in the book still apply. So thank you for, you know, making everyone aware of that, because it's very true. It definitely applies to you know, all ages and genders and so forth.
Yes. So, you know, I would love to have you back, and we can make arrangements for you to come back on the show when you have some other things going on, or if you just want to come back on and share some more information from the book, because the book was so intensive and it had a lot of detailed information. I just kind of skimmed over a lot of stuff. However, it gave you such a, it was just so much information. And get the book, everybody, okay?
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I hope you guys will enjoy it if you get it and read it. And if people buy it, you know, I definitely will autograph it. So.
Okay, great. So,
all right, well, thank you so much.
It was a pleasure, and we will keep in touch.
Okay, have a great day.
You too, thanks. Bye. Everyone, that was the amazing Shanti Das. She is truly a phenomenal woman who has made her mark in the entertainment industry as someone with great, great integrity and experience, dedication, all the things that you want to have as you move in your career, whatever it is that you decide to do, whether you are, like she said earlier, whether you're working for someone or you are an entrepreneur, whatever it is that you want, be the best at it, do your best, work hard. You know, the job may be difficult, but at the end of the day, when you look back, you're going to see how great that difficulty was for you in your success. and how strong it made you, and you know, what a better person you've become because you are able to persevere and just move forward and constantly believe in your goal and just stick with it and keep it going forward. Sometimes I am at a loss for words for things because there are so many different words that roll up in my head all at the same time. However, the bottom line is this. You have the opportunity to be the best you that you want to be, and it's all up to you. You hold the keys to everything that you want to do. Don't be afraid. Just go out and do it. And I guess Dr. King said it best. You don't have to see the whole staircase. Just take the first step. So take the first step. You never know where you're going to wind up. I've done it before, and I've been quite pleased with the outcome, and I'm still doing it now. So on that note, I'm going to let you go, and it was a pleasure having Shanti Das on the show. I really appreciate the opportunity that was afforded us. I want to thank Juanita Stevens for the opportunity that she presented to me with this introduction. So to all my listeners, have a wonderful evening, and be well, and we will be back again with you soon. Good day.
That's our show for today. So until next time, keep it real, listen, learn, and live.